Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the 99%. I'm here with Elliot Bassett.
Hey, everybody. This is me, Elliot.
And Marilyn Chakota.
Hey, how's it going?
And we are kind of mid-November here, heading into the holiday season. So we thought we would talk to you a little bit about things that you might want to look at investing in or maybe buying for your triathlete friend. So yeah, that's what we're going to talk about today. And we came up with a list of 11 things that we thought would be pretty good to have. If you already had the basics, so you're an athlete, you've completed a triathlon and you have everything you need in order to race. These are kind of like the next things you might want to purchase. These also could be upgrades. Like say you have one thing, but you say, well, you know, triathletes tend to be looking at kind of the latest and greatest. So these could also be upgrades to your current piece of technology or equipment. So to get us started, I'm going to run through the list that we have, and then we're all going to talk about what we picked to get first on that list. And we'll kind of run through our individual order of these things. So the things we talked about that like might be nice to have for an athlete are home gym equipment, a bike trainer, wetsuit, race wheels, heart rate monitor, fast running shoes, power meter, aero helmet, a bike fit and everything that kind of goes along with that, coaching or consulting or like anything in that realm.
And education.
And then massage, physio, chiro, treatment, GPS watch. So that's a list we came up with. So now what we're going to do is we're going to all say the number one thing we picked and a little bit about why, and then we'll go from there. So Elliot's going to kick us off with the first thing he picked on his list.
So yeah, I was just going to reiterate. So this is like, whether you've had one of these or you never have, this is just kind of, we're going to make the list that way. So my number one pick is, I'm not sure where you guys stand, but I was going to choose a bike fit. And Jesse said, whatever comes along with that. So sometimes that's a new saddle. Sometimes that's new shoes to make your bike fit. It could even be new handlebars, honestly. But yeah, just basically making sure that you are well fit to your bike. I feel like it tends to help prevent a ton of injuries. It makes you efficient, saves you energy, and it can also help you be more aerodynamic, which makes you faster. It's my number one.
That's a pretty good number one for sure. I'm not far behind you on that, but I think if I had to advise someone who has just gotten into the sport and they're looking for that next bump up in level and what's going to be the thing they say, okay, I'm going to go from, I've just completed my first set of triathlons and now I'd like to get better. Where's my best bang for the buck? I hate to say it because we're all coaches. I'm not trying to promote here or anything, but I definitely think a coach is worth the number one thing that you should invest in. Having someone, even if you're very experienced, someone to bounce ideas off of and help you plan, see your blind spots, help you prepare better, really understand where your strengths and weaknesses are and, you know, do that, whether you're brand new and you just really need that roadmap and the education to make those next steps, or you're really experienced and you need that, you know, feedback and, you know, expertise to help you achieve that higher goal that you're getting after. I think that should be the first place that you put your money.
Awesome. I definitely agree with everything that you both said, and I'm going to say the same thing slightly differently now.
What's your pick though? What's your number one pick?
So my number one pick was like a consult of some sort. And I would say that like, it wouldn't have to be actual coaching, but I would say you should sit down with someone, and it could even be like, you know, just a mentor in the sport, someone who has been in the sport a little bit longer than you, to kind of run through what your strengths and weaknesses are, what you have and what you don't have. And so like, for example, I have an athlete who has never gotten an official bike fit, but he got a fit at the shop when he got his bike. And then I saw him on it and I was like, you look great. Like you never had an injury riding. You look really good. You look like you're in a great position. So for him, I'm like, well, maybe it's not worth it to spend the money to get a bike fit because you've been riding this bike for a while and like all these, you've kind of checked all these boxes. So, you know, I'd say like having someone who can kind of like look through what you have and really help you make that decision of what the next thing is for you. And so like someone to have that conversation with and then, you know, kind of say, well, your swim is the game you need to elevate. So maybe like investing in something there or because I actually had bike fit on the top of my list for a while. And then I was like, well, maybe you don't need that. And then other things, like if you have a really aero road helmet, then like maybe you're not going to gain as much by investing $500 in the best aero helmet. So kind of helping you assess what you have and where you can make the most gains. So that's why I put some sort of consult, some sort of like educational chat with a coach or someone who kind of knows a little bit more.
So Jesse, what do you have at number two?
What do I have at number two is I have a bike fit.
Okay.
Because, you know, just to, again, like say everything you just said, for my number two is that I think that usually you can make gains there. Like I've gotten multiple bike fits over the years and I'm going to continue to do that because I'm changing as an athlete and kind of the science of aerodynamics is changing a bit as far as what's like, seems to be the fastest for people who don't have wind tunnel access. It's kind of like a little bit changing over time. So, you know, my position is evolving over time as I think most people should. So I think that getting a bike fit can make you faster aerodynamically, even if you've already had a bike fit in the past. And I also, I think that, yeah, if you have any sort of injury or niggle, it's always good to take a look at. And besides aerodynamics and injury, you can also potentially gain more power depending on where your hips are. So that's my number two.
Especially for the newer athletes, right? Because if you've got someone who's new, maybe they've started on, like, this is where we're going to get into like really big equipment changes. If someone goes in for a bike fit, it's like, are we going to make the most out of the equipment that they currently have? Or does someone come in and they say, look, I've got an endless, you know, the budget isn't an issue. And so might even be as aggressive as we're upgrading bars in terms of if they're riding road bars with clip-ons, maybe they're transitioning into aero bars. Maybe they're going from a road bike onto a time trial bike. You know, the fit itself is one thing, but then the actual, we don't have actual bikes on the list, but what type of bike are we looking at? Again, like it could be, you know, someone's on something that's a little heavier. It's not quite as aerodynamic. Those kinds of things, they go in for a bike fit, doesn't fit them great. We got to upgrade the bike and upgrade the whole, you know, that's obviously going to be a pretty costly project, but we said bike fit and everything that's included. So if that's everything that's included, I've certainly sent my athletes, I have a bike fitter that I use and, you know, really, really current on everything that's out there. And they'll say, you know, honestly, this bike is just, it's too heavy, it's too slow, and it doesn't fit you right. So we're looking at a whole overhaul here. And I've definitely taken athletes. It's like, we started them out for the first 2 years on a road bike with clip-ons. And it's like, okay, it's time. Let's make that transition up to actual aero bars and a TT bike. So, you know, I think when we talk about bike fit, it's being open-minded enough that these progression steps might happen as well in the actual bicycle and equipment.
So is that your number two?
I guess so. Yeah. Bike fit. I mean, because we're all talking about bike fit, right? And we all agree that's a really good place to invest money. But when we talk about bike fit, that might look like a pretty sizable, you know, upgrade in things or investment. So it's, you know, depends on, it's like in that bike fit, are we talking about, do we get a whole new bike or we just go transition from, you know, road bars and clip-ons to actual TT bars or, you know.
Or do you just shim your shoe or do you lower your seat? Yeah. That's it. Yeah, it's very wide ranging for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I spent from thousands of dollars to $40 on a bike fit. So yeah, there's definitely a spread there.
Yeah.
Should we all shout out our favorite bike fitters? Is that what we're here for?
It depends on where you are. Maybe.
I know it's always whoever's close and whoever you trust is mostly the best way to go about it.
Yeah, you definitely want to do your research with bike fitters because not all bike fitters are the same. And just because they have, you know, it's important to remember when you're looking for a bike fitter that they have a lot of experience and referrals. And And people get confused. They think, oh, just because they're retool trained. Well, remember, it's still, you know, that's a great tool for a good bike fitter, right? It's like, these are, it's like a, you've got a good mechanic with lots of great tools. So make sure that the mechanic itself is good. So, you know, same thing. You find someone who's trusted, used, maybe you've used them. They've got a good reputation, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that is true. Make sure they know how to tighten their bolts properly. Right. I think we've all heard a story or two about that. My number two, I am not going to agree with either of you. I don't have coaching in the top two. I'm sorry, but I do have bike fit at number one. My number two is race wheels. Purely just because if you have the bike fit, your body's probably in a pretty aerodynamic position. It's more or less free speed. And I know for a lot of people early in the sport, it's the thing that causes the most amount of anxiety when you show up to a race, and it makes a lot of people kind of feel like they have something to overcome. If that makes sense. And I feel like that's the easiest one. If you have a good bike fit and a set of race wheels, you don't really have any reason to complain. And I think taking out any reason to complain, it's like, well, then just, you know, get in and do the work. So that's my number two. It's definitely different, for those reasons. But my number three is right back into it: coaching, education, lessons. So I don't have it, you know, it's not in my top two, but I do have it right there in number three. I made plenty of mock-ups where I had it higher, but at the end of the day, I feel like you can go pretty far with a bike fit and race wheels, and coaching is not necessarily for everyone, but of course, obviously we all agree that we at least somewhat think we're valuable to people. Or at least I hope we have that amount of self-confidence. So that's my number three.
Yeah, I'd say number three for me would be a good fitting wetsuit, because nothing is, you know, tougher on an athlete when they spend all this time in the pool and they nail in their threshold sets and they're in great swim shape. And then, you know, a poor fitting or poorly designed wetsuit, and they get out in a wetsuit swim and it just blows their shoulders out, and they're, you know, 3 to 5 minutes slower than what they've been trained to do. And I think that can really, you know, can really impact the race for sure. Obviously it's the shortest piece, but it has an important role. And it also has an important role in an athlete's confidence at the start of the day. If you start your day out feeling slow and blown out and very far away from the times that you're used to, that can really play on someone. So I think, you know, if you're going to look at a piece of equipment right away, past those things, I would say make sure you research what wetsuits are. There's a lot of great top of the line ones, one that fits you well and your swim style well. And, you know, you take the time to go in and get it fit properly and know how to put it on right. And it's good, you know, a highly rated suit, that kind of thing.
Man, I'm probably going to get in trouble from Zoot for how low I put wetsuits on here. But I'm just going to say it's just because I've had such good luck with their suits over the years. I haven't had to really worry about that.
It's a given.
Yeah.
It's like, there. I got a good suit. Yeah.
But one thing I have not done the best at in my career is pacing races. And I think that I've lost 20 minutes, 30 minutes, an hour, 90 minutes in an Ironman due to that.
90? So,
that's a lot of walking, Jesse, is what you're talking about. Right, if it's 90 minutes, you are walking that marathon, man.
All right. Maybe 90 minutes is a stretch, but
not in the last 10, 11 years, right? You're talking about your early days?
Well, yeah. Okay. I mean, even then I'd say maybe 90 minutes is a stretch, but get the idea. Like 20 minutes, 30 minutes is a long time to lose sure. from pacing errors. So for my number three, I put power meter. You know, I think that there are probably a lot of, especially males in my position, who tend to not race as smart and ride pretty hard at the beginning of a race. And that can have some detriment. And obviously there's all the training implications where you can train a lot more intelligently with a power meter.
Can I just speak on behalf of all female pros, of which obviously I'm neither female nor pro, but the front of the pack age group guy who completely blows his wad in the first 90K of an Ironman, just screw off, get a power meter, maybe watch your numbers. So maybe Jesse has a point there, but I'm sure Marilyn, you've had to deal with that too, where they like blow by you and then you finish 4 hours in front of them. Anyways.
Yeah, it's definitely they could benefit from some pacing strategies for sure.
Yes. Maybe. Yeah. Maybe pay attention to the people with the P on the back of their leg might know what they're doing.
So. Yeah. I mean, female racers tend to be a little bit more intelligent than male racers. I mean,
I don't know. Well, I don't know.
No, all right.
I don't know. Just depends.
All right. Well. So yeah, that's what I put for number three, power meter. Obviously a great training tool and a great tool for pacing races.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, power meters are such a good investment, even for newer athletes, to not only for pacing and racing, but one thing I find new or experienced athletes is dialing in efforts in training. So, and giving yourself that feedback. So if you're not going to invest in a coach and you're going to map out things on your own, you can monitor progress. You can also, you know, if you're setting out specific workouts for yourself, you're able to say like, hey, am I actually hitting these numbers? Am I actually getting better? Am I, you know, maybe you feel a little bit tired, but the numbers are good, or, you know, all those kinds of things. You're going to get more out of the training that you're putting in front of yourself by being specific with the power meter, and you're going to be able to monitor progression and then translate that into like, how am I actually going to set myself a race plan to pace well and be successful? So that's pretty high on my list as well. I think, you know, all of these things that we're talking about in the top, you know, top five of our list, we're on number four now for each of us, is that, you know, they all have different weight in terms of a financial commitment. And I think any one of these, it's going to depend on where your strengths and weaknesses are. Some people are great at really dialing in their pace and their effort and execution of workouts and really, you know, smart with race tactics, and they don't need that kind of feedback. And so a power meter is going to come years down the road. But, you know, someone else who, you know, really, really needs that feedback and, you know, that constant feedback when they are racing, and to help them map out their training and understand, you know, what they're supposed to be doing each day as they progress, I think, you know, that can become a really valuable tool for some people. So
is that your number four, Marilyn?
That, I think so. I think I'm on number four. I'm not keeping as close a track as
I'm you. I'm making a list, but we skipped Jesse at number. Jesse was going to go 3-4. So
we're close to Christmas. We got Santa Claus here making his list.
I'm literally checking it twice. I'm not kidding. That's why I was asking. I'm like, wait, what is number four? Jesse, where are you at number four?
Number four, I put Aero Helmet. I think it's the most inexpensive way to buy speed. I know some road helmets are getting like pretty fast these days, but I think to have like a dedicated race helmet that's a little bit faster is, yeah, the most inexpensive way to save watts. And I think watch it can also, that. Sorry?
Watch that. Sorry, that was a terrible pun.
That was a very terrible joke. Took me a
second,
oh my God.
Took me a second to even get that. It was so bad. but yeah, I think it also can remind athletes to hold their head still. And that, so it, I think it can, yeah, it can play like a multifaceted way to make athletes faster. You know, you don't want them to look like an Elliot bobblehead. You don't want them to look left and right, so they can kind of keep their head a little more still. And yeah, having that reminder of that sound that an Aero helmet has, I think is pretty good for that. So that was my number four.
All right. My number four, I guess I was a lot. Marilyn had wetsuit at number three. I'm putting wetsuit at number four.
You guys are killing me here.
Well, I have not said power meter, and you might not hear it for a while. But yeah, I have wetsuit at number four. Marilyn had mentioned it earlier, but I feel like a good fitting wetsuit, one, makes you feel confident in the water. And I know for a lot of people, the last thing you need, if you're at the highest level, you're trying to win like the Olympics, the last thing you need is a wetsuit even slowing you down in transition. So you need it to fit well, you need it to be buoyant. And on the complete opposite side of things, if you're trying to finish an Ironman, you want to be as comfortable and confident in that suit as possible. So I really don't think where it matters at all where you stand in the sport. I think a good fitting wetsuit that you're comfortable with is really one of the most important things. And so like for me, the only piece of actual equipment I have in front of it is race wheels. And now that I'm saying it out loud, they're practically tied. But so that's my number four. My number five, is much in the realm of going fast, is the new fast shoes. there's multiple brands at this point. Obviously the Nikes are the ones that have gotten the most press. And even them, they have multiple kinds of Nikes, but I know Saucony just came out with one. ASICS, I think, has a secret one. Adidas has one. Hoka has one. I'm trying to think, does anybody else?
I mean, there are a lot of new fast shoes out there. But
carbon plated running shoes. So at this point, the science seems more or less clear. Personally, I think it seems like anecdotally, it seems as if certain people are going to benefit more than others. You know, there's certain people I know who like no real change in their training and their run splits seem to be quite a bit faster, and other people are just faster, but like faster is still faster. So at this point, I kind of feel like the race shoes are much in the same realm as the race wheels. It's just like, if you're going to go fast, this is something you need at this point. And we're making this list for people who are trying to race. So whether you're trying to win the race or set a PR at whatever position in the field, if they help you go faster, they help you go faster. So that's why I have it at number five.
Can I just also add, like, I'm going to be like the pain in the butt here, is that like with all of these, there's asterisks next to them for me. And I'm going to be like the difficult one, is that like, I agree, like a race helmet, if you go in the wind tunnel, it's like considered one of the most like bang for your buck in terms of numbers in the wind tunnel and aerodynamics. However, if you're at a race that is, you know, going to be quite hot and humid, and you're looking at potential. Now, I know a lot of the aero helmets now are ventilated so well that overheating isn't really a thing with the race helmets anymore. But if you've got a visor on the front and it's, you know, maybe it is the most aerodynamic helmet and it's going to be really hot and humid race and you're a really heavy sweater, like it's not, you know, you want to make, we want to make sure that we're guiding people in the right direction. It's like, yes, this is the most aerodynamics bang for your buck. However, also make choices based raced on race and what's like best for you. And same thing with, you know, with race wheels, I feel the same way about it. It's like, you know, you can pick the fastest set of wheels. Like say you've got a, you know, if we're talking pure aerodynamics and speed, you might have a three spoke on the front and a disc on the back. But if you're a 115 pound female who's doing an Ironman, that aerodynamically might be the fastest set of wheels. However, if you can't handle that bike and you're sitting up and you're getting blown all over the place and, you know, you're just riding slower and slower because you've got too much wheel for your skill level. So it's like all of these things are with an asterisk. It's like it needs to be appropriate for the race, the conditions, the terrain, the level of athlete. And it could possibly change with the same athlete depending on where they're going or what type of race they're going to. So just making sure that I like just make mention of that. I think that's important so that people don't hear these lists and run out and just like buy all these things and say, well, they said this would be faster. And, you know, and I think that too, with the race flats, you know, I've had a lot of athletes come to me and say, I would like to race in a light race flat. They train in one set of trainers and they've got a race shoe. However, if, you know, you're running a marathon, you want to make sure you can run a marathon fast. And not just a marathon, but an Ironman, which is obviously a little bit different gait as well, in those fast race shoes and not have any problems, because nothing's as slow as your calf tying up halfway at 30K into the run. And now you're just seized up on the side of the road and you got the fastest, lightest shoes on earth, but like you can't run anymore because your whole calf's in a ball of a knot and you're, you know, you're limping along and realize, oh, I can't actually run in these shoes. So
I want to point something out. You guys both have Coach at number one. So if you have a good coach, go ahead and get those race shoes or L helmet and ask your coach which ones you should get and why.
Exactly.
I think you could
advise like for this course, you should use this. Let's make sure we do the training runs in these shoes. Like, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why I put that at number one. It's like all of you these just, things.
Yeah. You pointed out the flaw in my list of having race wheels at two and coach at three, but I'm sticking with it. So I'll be stubborn.
That's good.
Wait. So what is your number five pick then?
I would say actually, if it was for number five, it would be race wheels. But like I said, you know, race wheels specifically for, you want to look at number one, what type of athlete you are and what are, because different wheels are going to be faster on different courses. The type of race wheels that are going to be fast at like Nice, you know, the 70.3 Worlds at Nice, I used to race the Ironman there, versus, you know, Texas or Florida, those are going to be different. So if we don't have like oh, I can buy 10 sets of race wheels. Let's look at what kind of athlete you are, what types of courses you generally are probably going to do, where your strengths and weaknesses are, and then like what's the best set of race wheels for you to invest in. You know, if you've got a little bit more flexibility financially, maybe you're investing in a couple different things there. But so yeah, number five for me would be wheels. I think that's a worthwhile investment as you get down the list.
Yeah, I've definitely made that mistake early on in my career of going a little bit big with race wheels. And I raced with a 1080 up front like the first year of my career, and I almost died. And I almost took a lot of people out with me. So that was a deep front wheel.
These are not so fast anymore.
No, when you're sitting up the whole time and your arms are shaking and your shoulders are tight from holding yourself out of the aero bars for 5 hours, it was not the fastest wheel choice.
Right.
So what's your number five then?
For my number five, going with the same theme here of not being always the best at judging my own RPE and pacing myself, I put GPS watch.
All right.
I think developing a good RPE is really important. And for me, it took a long time, and it took me using tools in order to help develop that. So now I'd be much better than myself 2 years ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago with just RPE. But I think sometimes you need to have the tools to look at in order to then not look at them. And so, yeah, I think a good GPS watch can help you, again, pacing and training, pacing and racing. And then you can, again, like hopefully get to the finish line faster because you have paced it appropriately and not had your fastest 5K at the beginning of an Ironman marathon. Moving on to number six, I put trainer at number six, and this is getting into like a gray area here, a tough one, but I'm thinking about athletes who maybe don't live in Tucson where you can ride outside all year round, athletes that have a full-time job and need to get workouts in early or late in the day, and maybe riding isn't the safest, most practical thing. I think as far as like time efficiency, a trainer can be a great tool to get in a short, hard workout. Get you more fit when it comes to that race day. So it's kind of the first thing on my list that I've gotten to that isn't like as race specific, but I do think that, sometimes I see athletes kind of like trying to get in an evening ride on the river path and there's people walking or they're on the roads and there's a lot of cars going by and they only have an hour and they only get in 12 miles because there's all these things happening, and you could get in kind of a much better workout if you just did it inside.
Number six, I guess I would put trainer like up quite high if someone lived somewhere where riding outdoors year round isn't possible. Like that would move the like way up the list, right? It's like we got to be able to ride our bike all year. So if you're living somewhere where you know it's going to be winter, let's move that like way up the list. If you're living in a place like Tucson, Florida, Texas, it can be, I think it can be nearly, not nearly last, but pretty far down the list. I think if I'm talking in generals, my number six would be investment in recovery. And that would be whether it's, a monthly massage or some kind of recovery tool, or, the biggest bang for your buck in improvement is staying injury free, right? If you can just keep training, you're going to keep getting better and without any of this stuff. So if we can get up every day and we can train and we can do that every day year round for years on end, no matter what any of this stuff does, you're going to get faster. So if you're, got a little bit of extra cash and you can get a Theragun or whatever those are called, or a foam roller, or, a really good massage therapist that you work with and you see them regularly, I think that's really worthwhile time investment wise and financial investment wise.
All right. So Marilyn, number six, kind of the massage, chiro, PT, recovery tools. I guess we could even throw in Normatex, et cetera.
Yeah.
Myself at number six, I have aero helmet. Much like Jesse had, it's more or less free speed. Most everything I've put on my list is basically free speed and coaching. It's good to go fast, and I think an aero helmet will help. Number seven, I actually have gym equipment. So like whether it's like you're lifting super heavy or it's just the basic band work, whether it's a yoga mat or when COVID hit, Erica, my girlfriend, lost access to her gym, obviously. And we had a little bit of gym equipment, but basically the first thing we did is she had a PT routine, and I've helped change it a little bit, but mostly she like had her routine set. And so we went out and we had to buy like the most expensive BOSU ball they had because they sold all the non-industrial strength size ones. So it was like, well, we don't know how long this is going to last. This is one piece that she does multiple exercises on. So kind of, I came to the conclusion of like gym equipment, similarly for the same way Marilyn came to Massage Cairo, but I feel like if you have a good coach, they hopefully can help you direct and use that gym equipment correctly and hopefully avoid the pitfalls where you'd maybe need a massage every week. So that's personally why I have Aero Helmet at 6 and then gym equipment at 7. So we're back to you at 7, Marilyn.
Oh, wow. Did we skip Jesse? Me already, huh? I probably number 7 would be Aero Helmet. That would be, like I say, that's, again, I say all these with a bit of an asterisk. I did one of my faster 40K TTs in the last year with just a regular road helmet and no race wheels, actually, just my training wheels, a regular road helmet, just got really aero. And
was it by chance directly down Lemon? Because no, I know not. A lot of people would PR that way.
Right, right. But I would say that, yeah, I mean, if you've got, best bang for your buck, there is no question that in the wind tunnel that is a really good investment. So that would be my number 7 as we move down the list.
Nice.
Finally, for my number 7, I've got my zoot suit here. I like to put this guy on. I think having a good wetsuit that fits you well is super important for racing. I think you can, you might be able to get by with something lesser for a while, but if you want to feel good getting out of the swim, it's good to have a good suit. And I'll just continue my shameless plug that I do really like suits. They have pretty flexible shoulders, and I feel pretty good getting out of the water in them.
And I just want you guys to know that as hand-me-down zoot suits from Jesse or Hoffman, they work great. And I'm very glad. I think at one point I coached like half their pro team. That was a long, long time ago, but I've had a number of zoot wetsuits. I love them. And so thanks to Zoot. So
I have not actually tried a zoot suit, so maybe I should try one. I have tried that because I actually really struggled for some reason with the shoulders and a lot of wetsuits when I was racing, and I would pick a sleeveless wetsuit as often as I could, which I knew wasn't as fast, but I was faster just because my arms didn't fatigue as badly. The one wetsuit I found that I loved actually is the Colting wetsuit. I've gotten that since, and the Colting wetsuits are by far, out of all the ones I've ever tried over the years, I felt like I didn't have any load in my shoulders at all with it, and really good body position with the suit. So yeah, that's my favorite. If we're shamelessly plugging, it's just I really do like their suits quite a lot, but they're not as common. They're harder to find.
So
I was just gonna stay on wetsuits for just a second. I think one thing to look for is a lot of companies now are doing the thing where they have different material for the shoulders that's much thinner, mm-hmm. Much thinner neoprene, and that tends to have more give. And I think that's one thing that the Zoot suit has, and I know a lot of other brands have as well. I just happen to wear the Zoot one. I think looking for that change in material, unless you're gonna do something like Alaska Man, having less warm shoulders with a little more give can be really good.
Yeah, good buoyancy in the body and then good mobility in the shoulders is the two things that you should be if you're upgrading, because that's the thing with the lower end suits too, right? They might not have as good like you're saying, flexibility in the shoulders, but they also maybe lack some of the extra paneling for the good body position in the water. And for a lot of triathletes that don't come from swim backgrounds, that can make a big difference in their swim times. You get a good wetsuit that props their body a little bit higher up in the water and they swim a lot faster.
Yeah,
totally. Especially in salt water, all of a sudden you're just on top of the water, just flowing out there. Yeah. But moving on to my next one, which is number 8, I believe. I am going to go with Aero wheels. Everything you guys already said, it's free speed, and I think that the psychological effect is also huge, especially if you get a disc in the back, which, you know, is always faster, but it sounds cool. You feel fast and your bike looks really cool. So I mean, what could go wrong?
What more do you need? If your bike doesn't go, whoa, are you even riding?
Just sound pretty. Yeah, totally. Oh my God. Next one on the list for me would be the runners. So like, again, saying that make sure that you can actually run the distance that you're going to be racing and at pace in them before you just go out and buy fast runners and throw them on a shelf and never, and then throw them on for the race. So, you know, test them, try them, be confident in them. And then if you are having good race flats that you are confident in, can make a big difference. Before all these fancy shoes came out, that I would, it almost makes me want to start running again just because they sound so awesome. I'm tempted to buy a pair just to what they feel like. But I used to have, you know, I'd train in a set of ASICS trainers that were pretty heavy and durable and lots of stability. But what I'd race in was an ASICS like race flat. But because of the marathon, I knew that that difference in cushioning would beat me up a bit. And I put a little orthotic in there. And then actually one of those really, really thin Spencos, because it was still very light, but it just offered just a little extra layer of cushioning. And honestly, it made a really big difference in terms of feeling like light and fast and you know, getting out of my bricks of trainers that you had to log a lot of miles. You needed to stay injury free. So I trained in, you know, these big old heavy duty bricks and for shoes, and then would throw on the race flats and felt pretty fast. But, you know, so those little things make a difference. And I think now with all the fancy shoes, you don't have to jimmy them up like I used to. And you can, you know, have some fun with that.
Number eight, I'm coming in with a GPS watch. I realize that listening to your guys' list, I feel like I need to, as you guys list things that I have much further down the list, I want to butt in and like tell you my explanation, et cetera. But for GPS watch, personally, it's like the first like kind of gadget, if you will, that I have listed on my list. And it's quite simply, it's just like, it helps you track your routes if that's something you're interested in. I think knowing where you're training is really useful. And if you do have a scenario where you can just even just know your pace or know your time, or know kind of like your start and end points of various intervals, I think that's really important, really straightforward. And honestly, like I would probably even put a Timex in the same position, but now that there are GPS watches, it's like, why not take the extra bonus? So that's what I have at number eight. At number nine, I have heart rate monitor. And for me personally, I don't necessarily feel like someone needs to be a slave to their heart rate monitor, but I do find it really interesting. Just if you did have a tool, I would actually value a heart rate monitor over a power meter. One, you can use it on the bike and the run. And you'll notice we didn't mention run power meters, cause I'm assuming we all more or less think it's BS. Maybe I'm wrong, but, so that's why I have heart rate monitor at number nine. I feel like it's something you can use in all three sports, and it's really great to track. And depending on what kind of training you want to do, or your coach wants to do, or what kind of climate you're in, it has a whole bunch of different uses. So that's why I have heart rate monitor at number nine.
Yeah. You know what is funny is I kind of forgot about heart rate monitor. I guess I've lumped that in with power meter, cause I feel like those things go together. Cause you know, you cross-reference data.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
So it's like, you know, it's kind of like one without the other. Obviously, you know, what you're seeing and like you say, you know, different climates and whether someone's getting dehydrated or they're bonking or, you know, it's hot out or it's cold out, you're going to see cross-reference in data based on power meter versus heart rate. And both of those can tell an athlete a lot of information when they're racing and when they're training and how to progress as well, or whether, you know, how tired they are, how, you know, all of these things. So I think I would throw heart rate monitor up there fairly high. I just kind of missed it because I lumped it in with power meter, the two together. So I guess now I'm stuck with it being down on the list. However, my value in heart rate is the same as it is in power. I like all my athletes to wear both all the time. So if they're running with the GPS, so we can see pace compared to heart rate, and then understand what the relationship between those two data points is. And same thing with riding. I want to know, like, power isn't just enough. I want to see, you know, the cross-reference between power and heart rate, and if they're outside, speed and cadence as well. So all of those things are pretty important metrics to compare off one another so that you're constantly educating them and seeing what's going on when they train and what you're trying to get out of the session. And then of course, how to apply that when they race. So
which one are you putting at 9, GPS or heart rate monitor?
Oh my God. See, that's the thing is
the stress is on.
I took those and lumped them all together. Power meter, GPS and heart rate was like gadgets all at once at the beginning. So I now have them way down there, I guess at 9.
I'll 10. Shift your list.
However, those need to be shifted up to where I had power meter.
Do you want them at 4, 5, 6 and yeah. Everything drops? Okay.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm kind of not great with the list here.
I'm jumping ahead, but
Elliot's getting really serious to the list over there. He's a list Nazi.
He's like making me nervous. He's like, I feel like I'm at the racetrack taking bets. What's your bet? Like, oh my God, I don't know.
I just think it's interesting. Okay. So I'm going to okay. You have power meter, then heart rate, then GPS, then we'll go to race wheels, et cetera. Doesn't matter. Jesse, yeah. Do your thing.
So I wanted to jump in the whole heart rate thing is I wish that I could look at athletes' heart rates and not have them look at it. That would be my perfect scenario. Because especially in racing, I've seen so many athletes get freaked out about high heart rates and like do things to try and correct it where, you know, it's just race day and that tends to happen. And
well, the coach would tell them that, hey, your heart rate's
right. Okay. Higher. Fair. But like, you know, it's
tell them what to expect from the different heart rates.
but still, I've still had seen athletes that, you know, even though they know, they just get freaked out and like, they can't help, even if it's just like, even if it's not on purpose, they still like go into like self-preservation mode and slow down. And I mean, I've seen my heart do some things in races that it could never do in training. And, if I was like worried about that, then, I would have gone a lot slower. I wish I could have it to use as data without having athletes get freaked out.
Is that on your list now?
Well, it's on my list, just not yet. I'm trying to lay some excuses for why I have it so low right now, Elliot. That's what I'm doing. Not that I don't value it. I just
we go back to number one. The coach is supposed to tell the athlete these.
Boom. There you go. Good answer. Good answer.
I also just don't. I feel like it's so uncomfortable. But anywho. Sometimes I feel like I can't breathe. It makes me feel claustrophobic.
Yeah.
We didn't have meditation on the list. Maybe we should have meditation number one for Jesse.
Or a psychologist. It needs to be quite high, apparently.
Yeah.
So I guess number 9, I'm going to put the self-care, massage, PT work, any, whatever kind of advice you're getting in that realm or body work you're getting done. I would hope it would be like some sort of educational component on what body work you need to be doing, maybe for yourself. And sometimes that's above and beyond like the scope of what a coach can do. So seeing someone to help guide you in that process can be really important. So that's why I put it 9.
Okay. And 10?
10, I finally have the fast shoes. I think that they do help. They do make you faster, but I think that my anecdotal evidence on this is that the faster you are, they kind of help you get a little bit more fast. If you're not running very fast, then I don't think they're going to have that same impact because your ground contact time is too long. And so you're not getting a benefit from the carbon plate. So I don't have like a pace cutoff, but let's say like, I don't know, if you're running over say 9-minute pace or 8:30 pace for your marathon, then I don't know if you're going to get a benefit from that carbon plate because you're just not, that spring effect isn't going to have the same impact. So the faster you are, the more important they become. And again, I don't have any sort of actual data to back that up. That's just kind of what I've noticed with athletes using them. I do think they help people stay resilient over a race if they're not as resilient, but I think that the return is better if you're already running fairly quickly. Yeah, I don't know if you guys have noticed that.
Yeah, I totally agree with that, actually. I mean, I think that's a really fair point. I mean, if you're going to be out on the marathon for probably over 3.5 hours, you're better off just to have really, really good durable shoes. And that's going to be faster than, you know, upgrading the runners to some of these faster shoes.
All right. Marilyn, you only have 2 things left, right?
I've lost track of the list. I do know the one of the things that is way down on my list. So if I have to put in the bottom two, it would be at home gym equipment. Okay. I think that most exercises that any endurance athlete is going to need to do can make do with body weight type routines, that can work those same areas without having to make any investment at all. And, if you're needing to add a little bit of weight for resistance and you don't have any money to invest in gym equipment, you can use water jugs, you can use soup cans, you can use, you know, a rock. So I think there is bricks.
I've got a sweet cinder block setup right now. I've got a bunch of cinder blocks I've been lifting and it works great.
Yeah. So I think there's so many like at home gym routines. I agree with all your points in the importance of coming up with those PT specific routines, but I think you can do almost any routine for any strength or injury for endurance athletes with body weight or quite lightweight with stuff that you can just find around the house. So that's pretty low on my list. And you know, getting that routine from a PT, physical therapist, or coach would be high on the list, but you know, that's not necessarily investing in any gym equipment.
Fair enough. So my number 10 is kind of completing the trifecta you had, which is GPS, watch, heart rate monitor is what I have at 8, 9. And then 10 is power meter. And so that's just those 3 things. I basically somewhat value them all very closely, but I do think if I could only have one, I'd put the watch. If I could only have 2, I'd do the watch and heart rate monitor. And if I had 3, I'd put power meter last. Obviously I don't really value power meters nearly as much as most coaches. I do think they're nice to have, but I don't think it's a be all and end all personally. So that's why I have that at number 10. And then at 11, I have massage chiro PT. But I realized, so I have gym equipment much higher up at 7. I have the massage chiro PT stuff further down, 'cause I kind of like added, I thought like yoga mat or like a foam roller or that sort of thing. For some reason, I put that into gym equipment. So that's kind of why I guess my gym equipment takes care of a lot of those home needs. And the only other thing is, personally, if somebody could fix a problem on their own consistently and they had the knowledge to do it, I'd rather them have the ability to do that than to be forced to like book in to go somewhere, just because it takes extra time and energy. And a lot of times triathletes are short on time and energy. So that's why I have massage, et cetera, at number 11.
Yeah, I think that's the old catch 22, right? Like I 100% agree with you. I think if I can foam roll something myself, it's easier, but it does take like that mental energy. Whereas if I can like just, if I have the time, but not the mental energy, and I can pay and go get a massage, then that means I just have to lie there, which is great. But I think that, you know, especially now, like having a toddler running around this morning without pants on for 2 hours, like, you know, I can just foam roll a little bit during that time. And like, then I can still be here. And it's much, much easier than being like, all right, I need 90 minutes to go get a massage. But yeah, that's always a tough one.
So you, what are your last two, Jesse?
Heart rate monitor and home gym. Just to kind of echo a few things I've already said about making excuses for why these things are so low. I think, you know, heart rate monitor is great data to look at, but I think that, you know, especially say training in a place like Tucson, where, you know, when it gets to be 110 and I'm riding my bike for a long time, my heart rate's going to stay pretty high after a while. And it's no longer giving me like super useful data. Like, yeah, my heart rate's high. I know I don't need to keep it staring at me in the face, but it is good to see that after, to say, okay, like it was 110 and that's the situation I was in. And then, you know, home gym again, like I've got some fancy cinder blocks and, you know, you can have a duffel bag full of sand and, you know, I don't know if you need great home gym equipment, but if you have it, I think it's awesome to use, and I'm not knocking it. You know, if someone was going to gift me a home gym setup, I'd be psyched on it and I would use it, but it is just a little bit lower on my list. And just to circle back to the shoe power meters, because I realized you mentioned it and I didn't get to say anything. I think that it is actually like kind of is cool data. I think that the trouble is that right now the power like watts are not there's that, but it's also not the best measure because you need to go like in quarter watt increments or something, because power on the run is so much less variable than power on the bike. Like I watch an athlete run and like their easy runs are at say, 250 watts and their hard runs are at 270 watts. And so that like the variance in there is just, it's not high enough to say, okay, like, you know, you've got this, you've got to stay in like a 2 watt spread on your easy runs. Well, you can't really, it's hard to do. So I think once they kind of can tease that out and give you a little bit better measure, then it will be a little bit easier to like train with run power.
I don't think it's going to be possible in our lifetime. Because if you look at force plate treadmill data, I know a guy who runs a force plate treadmill mostly for animal locomotion at University of Montana. Actually, Erica worked in his lab. And you can do it with people as well. And the information is super useful. And there's a couple PTs around the country who have those kind of things. But the treadmills that have that information that you could use right now are massively expensive and super large. Like they're way bigger than your normal treadmill. And the idea of fitting that into a shoe seems like, I imagine they're going to be able to do it. Like at the rate that technology is advancing, like, I feel like, yeah, that's going to like, I guess when I was a kid, a laptop would take up the entire desk I'm on. And now we have tiny phones. So maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they will be able to get it into a shoe in 10 years or something. But currently I don't see the technology as being very useful, but anyways, Marilyn, I was going to say that I think you had listed everything except trainer, but I wasn't sure if you meant trainer to be higher up on your list.
Oh yeah. I mean, trainer, I felt like I put that on the list somewhere in our little conversation here. I think it's, you know, like I said, if you live somewhere where it's winter 9 months of the year, trainer should be pretty high up on the list. I think if you live in somewhere where it's sunny and warm and you can ride outdoors, you know, 90% of the time, then, you know, it should be fairly down on the list. So, you know, that's, yeah, that one for me is like a fluctuation, you know, that's definitely a fluctuation. If I had to add like extra little fun things, I mean, I don't know if we're allowed to add things to our little list that are, you know,
Elliot's list is done. He's done with the list. There are no more ads.
I only have what I haven't said my last thing, but go.
Okay. Go for it. Go for it. Yeah.
Well, my last thing, I thought it was smart trainer. So I'm the one who lives somewhere where everyone has a trainer. So in my brain, when we said you have the bare minimum to do triathlon, that included trainer, because otherwise you don't ride for 4 or 5 months of the year.
Yeah.
So to me, it was a smart trainer, and like, I've been riding on rollers for forever. And so it's like the only thing on this list that I actually own and I'm going to use anytime soon, other than race wheel or like race wheels and race helmet, is rollers. Right. And so a trainer, but smart trainer, I was going to put last for a bunch of reasons, but anyways, yeah. Carry on. I'm very interested for your bonus items.
Well, I think like it's some cool things that people could consider in just investing their money. If we're like, oh, we got endless money to spend. It's, you know, things like, it's like nutritionists, sports psychologists. It can get as simple as like, what's your swim equipment look like? Do we want to get cords for dry land stuff? Do we want, you know, take a look at all your swim equipment as far as buoy bands, you know, toys like that, metronomes, you know, all these little training tools that you can invest in if you're looking for that extra edge in training. You know, those can be all part of the list for sure. And you know, the big craze now is, do you go, you know, tubular, clincher, tubeless, you know, are we looking at that in races? You know, those kinds of things.
Wait, are we even debating? We're just all on tubeless, right?
I mean, racing, you would ride tubeless. Okay. Training, I mean, we have these conversations all the time. Like, I don't want my training wheels to be tubeless because it's just a mess out there. Yeah, I don't like it at all. But I
ride tubeless more.
But for racing, for sure. So, and then even just things like looking at your water bottle cage setup, you know, there's so many cool different setups as far as the aero ones up the front or the fancy ones out the back or down tube, or, you know, back when I was racing, it was a little bit more like you had zip ties and you had your little bottle on the front and, you know, you're trying to make it as aero as possible. But now, you know, there's some pretty, pretty sweet setups out there. So that could be a good place to invest some money. Yeah. So, you know, things like that, getting video analysis in the water, that can be a worthwhile investment, you know, just extra little frills that if you've got some extra cash to burn, where might you put that? I think those are all places that a triathlete can make improvements and benefit from.
I thought for sure you were going to say custom paint job, but you know, to each their
own. That's got to be up there. That's got, I mean, if your bike looks fast, it's going to be fast.
Yeah. And like Iron Man tattoo is going to get you pretty high. And then what else?
Oh my God.
Well, actually, one thing we didn't say is just like
shaving.
A razor. That's true. We never mentioned like the aero suits. I mean, I feel like those things are super fancy, but if you have a nice one, that's probably kind of like right in that realm, but they clearly don't last that long, but they're useful.
I mean, I think it doesn't have to even be like the paper thin ones, right? I think investing in a good tri suit that's like fits pretty tightly. I think sleeves are in general faster unless it doesn't fit well. So yeah, like things like a good aero suit of some sort, even if it's just a standard tri suit that's pretty tight. A wax chain is a nice thing to get at the holidays that you can use. Ice Friction happens to rewax their chains. So you can buy one and then pay some small fee to get it rewaxed, which is nice. So you don't have to wax yourself and they will definitely do a better job than you can do with your crock pot. And I had a couple other like little things like that, but yeah, there are definitely a few ways to kind of, I guess, for lack of a better word, buy some speed that isn't super expensive, but I think aero suit and wax chain are a pretty good way to go. Having hydration placed well. So looking into spending a little money at a good aero drink up front, if you will. And then rear bottles that you can actually reach, all good ways to kind of buy some bonus speed.
What are the machines, the carbon fabrication things, 3D printer? Like you just need a 3D printer these days and you can kind of make a whole bunch of those things. So that maybe that's true. What we all need. We all need a $100,000 3D printer to make our bike fast.
But I did notice something in all things Marilyn said before then. There was a few things, but a lot of it was education. And I think that was cool to hear her say that, you know, whether it's a nutritionist or a psychologist, someone who's kind of like educating you on different facets of the sport is cool. Cool thing to gift or receive.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that goes for a coach too, right? Because you don't know what you don't know. And the more you're exposed to different ideas, the better it's going to help you, even if it's something you maybe don't necessarily agree with or want to do. It's always good to know that it's out there as a possibility.
Yeah, and the last little frilly thing that I would add, if someone was going to invest, I know it's not possible in these couple of years, but some of the biggest gains that I made as an athlete when I was coming up was actually going to, if you can go to good training camps where you're exposed to the next level of athletes that you want to be around. So maybe you're in an area where there's not that many athletes, you know, or you're the best athlete there. So you're always the one dictating the pace. You sign yourself up for some kind of training camp where you go and spend a week or longer with a good coach and, you know, 20 like-minded athletes that are either where you want to go or a step above you. Boy, do you step up your performance. I mean, the first really big camp I went to for 2.5 weeks, I came out of that and that's when I won an Ironman, because you just push yourself to a new level and are exposed to like, okay, this is what's going to be expected of me now. And so I think there's a lot of value in that. If, you know, when it's in years, we're allowed to do that kind of thing. But I think that's, you know, that's a good place that's sort of outside the box to look at investing your money as well.
Yeah. That's like the education, you know, like nothing teaches you better than getting your butt kicked. So whether that's signing up for, you know, if you're the fastest person in your region or something, and you go race in a different region, you learn by getting your butt kicked. You know, if you have to fly across the world to do it, that's an education as well. So, and that's why I think you see a lot of like younger pros doing everything they can to go to a world championships. And you might say, well, they only pay 10 deep at worlds. Why are you going? Well, the experience is invaluable. So that, I mean, that's a big reason there, but that goes down anywhere, whether it's your local 5K or you're trying to win a world championships.
And I think the education piece at the camp can go any direction, right? Even athletes that like might not quite be as like say fast as you, they might do something a little differently, and you can always learn or make takeaways. So yeah, getting out there and seeing what other athletes are doing is a huge benefit of camps. I mean, besides the massive fitness bump you get from doing a big block of training. I mean, obviously the proof in winning a race is pretty good proof.
Yeah.
I don't know. Do you guys have anything else to add to that list?
The only thing was, I think we were going to type them up and you could see each of our lists. You were going to tag them in show notes or something.
Yeah.
And then go along from there, just so I know we were kind of bouncing all over the place, but it's more the idea behind everything. And so I'll send that over to Jesse and he'll post it when we post the.
Yeah. Then there's pressure for me to organize my list. I couldn't even organize it while we were talking about it.
I've got it written out for you, don't you?
Okay. Well, that's good. That's good. Glad somebody's got my back.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't have anything to add. I think, you know, those are good places to spend your money. I think if you're doing all those things and getting out the door every day, you're going to keep getting better. And, you know, it's fun. It's fun to spend money on this stuff. It's our hobby. It makes us happy. Even if it's your job, and you know, it's fun to get something new and make you feel fast. So I think that's a pretty good place to start.
There you go.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you guys. And happy shopping to everyone.
shopping into the holidays. Woo-hoo!
Yeah.
Amazon.
are we singing Jingle Bells to tune it out? Jingle
Bells. All right. Thanks, guys. Talk to you next time.
Take care. Bye.
See ya.